So, guys, listen to this. This is not being talked about enough in the conservative movement, okay? While every would-be conservative that we thought was with us is starting to show their true colors, the left is freaking out because Alabama said that preborn children have rights, and so maybe IVF should be banned. The left is freaking out right now because they're saying that if preborn children are persons and they have a right to life, and that's like, that's going to be the law of the land, then like we're going to have to close our doors at IVF clinics out of fear of criminal prosecution for doing what? The IVF industry is freaking out right now because they're saying that if the law that's been recognized by the state Supreme Court in Alabama applies to all unborn children and that creates any kind of precedent in other states, then we won't be able to continue operating in the way that our industry operates, which then begs the question, well, then what are you doing? What are you doing then? Are you doing something to compromise children's right to life? Are you doing something that maybe pro-lifers should oppose? Now, I get a lot of flack from, you know, progressive left-wing pro-abortion activists online saying, you know, well, I hope you're as mad about the 1 million frozen embryos as you seemingly are about babies who are killed. Yes, obviously, that's a human rights abuse too. One of the greatest human rights abuse in America right now is that we have 1 million souls on ice, perpetually frozen and stored in labs, okay? Yes, pro-lifers oppose that, but usually we have a baby who's about to be ripped apart right now, right today, outside an abortion center by a mom who's about to pay an abortionist to kill her child right now. So, like, obviously, the pro-life movement tends to focus more intensely and passionately with more urgency in that situation right now, but that doesn't mean that we should be okay with what's happening in the in vitro fertilization industry, IVF. And if you've listened to the show before, you've listened to my conversations with my friend Katie Faust, you know that I've lost donors over speaking out against IVF, which is very interesting. I'm actually making a pro-life argument, a pro-life case as to why pro-lifers should be opposed to IVF. I'm not making personal preference arguments. I'm actually making pro-life arguments why pro-lifers should not support IVF, and yet too many do. And so what did we see in the news very recently? Alabama Supreme Court rules that IVF embryos are children. Associated Press reporting in February said the decision was issued due to a pair of wrongful death cases brought by three couples who had frozen embryos destroyed in an accident at a fertility clinic. Justices, citing the Alabama Constitution, ruled that an 1872 law allowing parents to sue over the death of a minor child, quote, applies to all unborn children, regardless of their location. Yes, good job, Alabama judge. That's right. Our value and our dignity and our right to life are not dependent on our location. They said unborn children are children, without exception, based on developmental stage, physical location, or any other ancillary characteristics. Justice Jay Mitchell wrote in Friday's majority ruling by the all-Republican court. The Associated Press writes, the ruling brought a rush of warnings about the potential impact on fertility treatments and the freezing of embryos, which previously had been considered property by the courts. So the Associated Press, not surprisingly, is freaking out. Correct, AP. When you stop labeling people as property, it does create a rush of warnings, doesn't it, about whether people should be treated as property. When you stop labeling people, human beings, property, you kind of have to stop doing what you're doing to those people because they're humans. Correct. It brought about a rush of warnings. This reminds me of what my friend Katie Faust says. She says, babies are the subjects of rights, not objects of right. They have a right to be known and loved by their mother and father. They have a right to not be commodified, designed, and purchased. We fought a civil war to end the practice of buying and selling people, and we're bringing it back in the name of progress. Excuse me. Now, the other side freaks out because they recognize now that if the baby is not property, but a human being, then the big fertility industry can't operate the way that its business necessarily must operate in order to be successful. Do you see where this is going? O for pro-lifers, who would be as consistent. The left is seeing that if the pro-life ideals that are being espoused in Alabama are applied everywhere, then it must necessarily lead to the banning of big fertility and nearly every example and circumstance of in vitro fertilization. And yet pro-life alleged conservatives don't seem to get this. And we'll get to that in just one second. Many of these pro-life conservatives are coming out in support of IVF. So many pro-lifers I know, including donors I've lost, angry at me because I've said IVF is wrong. The Associated Press continues and says, by insisting that these very different biological entities, listen to that bigoted language, by insisting that these very different biological entities are legally equivalent to us, the best state-of-the-art fertility care will be made unavailable to the people of Alabama. No healthcare provider will be willing to provide treatments if those treatments may lead to civil or criminal charges. Paul Amato said, president of the American Society for Reproductive Medicine. This is everything right now. This is everything. This is amazing. Okay. He's admitting that if preborn entities are human beings, indistinguishable in value and dignity from an infant or toddler, then the entire industry of big fertility will be destroyed. That's right. That's right, Paul. Because human beings have dignity and rights. It's wrong to mass produce them in labs for experiments and for a backup plan for infertile couples. And it's wrong to perpetually freeze them. The only question is, will conservatives help him realize his fears or not? Will conservatives help the left realize their fears of us taking our beliefs to their necessarily logical conclusion? Will we exercise the intestinal fortitude and courage to carry our right ideas to the logical conclusion that he so fears? Well, apparently not very many of them are. Alabama Governor Kay Ivey just signed a bill protecting IVF clinics and staff from lawsuits. She said Alabama works to foster a culture of life, and that certainly applies to IVF. She says, I am pleased to sign this important short-term measure into law so that couples in Alabama hoping and praying to be parents can grow their families through IVF. South Carolina Representative Nancy Mace just floated a federal bill to protect IVF. Carrie Lake, who we all think should probably be the governor of Arizona, said IVF is extremely important for helping countless families experience the joy of parenthood. I oppose restrictions on IVF. And Donald Trump said, like the overwhelming majority of Americans, including the vast majority of Republicans, conservatives, Christians, and pro-life Americans, I strongly support the availability of IVF for couples who are trying to have a precious baby. But even before or directly after the overturning of Roe versus Wade, IVF clinics were freaking out that their industry would have to shut its doors in red states because those red states often had pre-Roe abortion bans that had been on the state books before 1973, which would revert their state back to a near or total abortion ban. And IVF clinics were saying, I'm afraid for my IVF patients. This article at Northwestern EDU said, I'm afraid for my IVF patients. After Roe v. Wade, dismantling fertility, doctor says. IVF clinics started admitting that if the right to life and personhood of unborn babies was established at conception, then their business model is destroyed. In other words, they were more consistent than much of the so-called pro-life conservatives and Republicans. Their business practices are built on the reality that they will destroy human life. Excuse me. That's why they're concerned about the overturning of Roe v. Wade, which if you're in a state that had an abortion ban before 1973, it's probably illegal in your state again now, which means that the things that IVF clinics do, they might not be allowed to continue doing. And they're the ones ringing the warning bell about that. Not enough pro-lifers. Interesting. What does that say then about the IVF industry? If the IVF industry is admitting that pro-life laws post Roe v. Wade pose a threat to how they operate their business. What do you think that says about the activities that the IVF world does? So listen, if you're pro-life and you support in vitro fertilization and you think this is a blessing of liberty and you say, I'm pro-life, I want more babies. I want more babies to come into this world. And so I want more families to have children. And so for families who can't have children, I want them to be able to have babies through IVF. This is wonderful. I want you to think about this question. I want you to dwell on it for a second, okay? Why then are the people in the IVF industry freaking out about expanding pro-life legislation in states that favor abortion laws after Roe v. Wade? I guess they're recognizing a connection between pro-life beliefs and mandated pro-life laws and the kind of things they do that those laws might not allow them to do. Oh, but if you're pro-life, then maybe you should share that concern too. If the other side sees how our beliefs instituted through law might shut down the business, the industry of big fertility and in vitro fertilization. So why is IVF wrong? Okay, let's talk about this. I think in vitro fertilization should be banned. That's what I think. Now, of course, someone's always going to say, and it's an argument and a response that deserves a good reply. But Seth, what if we create one baby at a time and we seek implantation one child at a time? We don't keep children frozen. We're a heterosexual married couple, so we're not using a surrogate, and we're not gay couples, so we're not denying a children a right to their mother or father. We are the mother and the father, and we're just getting my wife's eggs and my sperm, conceiving in a lab in a test tube, and immediately seeking implantation. So see, we're doing it the ethical, moral way. Yeah, okay, good job. You found the one ethical carve-out where you can make a moral argument that in vitro fertilization is permissible. That is not what's happening in the vast majority of the entire in vitro fertilization industry in America today. That is the vast minority of what happens, okay? It does not reflect what's normally going on. And oftentimes, couples who are pro-life and Christian and start IVF in that very sort of ethical, justifiable way, sometimes don't continue to do that because it's so cost prohibitive. Because they're creating one baby at a time, the baby doesn't implant. They create another one, the baby doesn't implant. That's why so many couples end up creating multiple babies, in order to get more bang for their buck, in order to actually be able to financially afford this process. So we need to talk about why IVF is wrong and why we as pro-lifers should not even seek this one moral ethical carve out, because there's no way you're going to ban every other way in which IVF is practiced, but keep your one tiny little ethical moral carve out without the whole door being blown back open for all the disgusting, dystopic, commodifying eugenicist ways in which IVF is practiced. So why is in vitro fertilization wrong? Okay. One, it can violate a child's right to life. Two, it can violate a child's right to not be frozen. And three, it can violate a child's right to their mother and father. And in many cases, all of those things happen at one point or another. Okay. In many cases, this is what's happening in the in vitro fertilization industry. How does it violate a child's right to life? Well, in the vast majority of cases, you're creating multiple children. You know what I'm talking about? You know what in vitro fertilization is? You generally create a bunch of babies in a lab, and then you release 2, 3, 4, 5 into mom so that hopefully one will implant. You see, you're increasing the likelihood that she will get pregnant by releasing several embryos into her as opposed to just one. So at least you're getting something for what you paid for, right? Instead of one at a time, and the baby never implants. So what are you doing? You need to think through this with the correct Christian pro-life principles at play. That human life begins at conception. These are persons. These are babies. They have an eternal soul, okay? So what are we doing? We are creating lots of babies, knowing that some of them will be sacrificed on the altar of our fertility. That's what we're doing with in vitro fertilization in the vast majority of cases. You know that not every one of those children created is going to be implanted, gestated, born, and then welcomed into this world. You know that's not the case. So you're arranging a priori the creation of multiple eternal souls and people so you can get your one child. Now, listen, I understand the need to, the desire, the urge, the drive to have a baby. And I understand the pain of trying to get pregnant for a year, for 2 years, for 3 years, for years and not getting pregnant. I understand how difficult that is. I understand the draw to want to do in vitro fertilization. But the desires of adults must never trump the needs and rights of children. A healthy society will be judged by the kind of world that it leaves to its children, to quote Dietrich Bonhoeffer. A society is judged by how adults sacrifice for children, not sacrificing children for your desires, wants, and needs. So even if you're not aborting babies or discarding babies that were frozen in labs, even if you're not doing that, you have to acknowledge that in the vast majority of cases, multiple babies are created. So you can get one. I call that sacrificing real human beings on the altar of your fertility. Oh, Seth, you're so judging. That's so mean. How's that any different than having sex when you don't know how many babies are going to get created? Really? You really think you're creating 8 babies every time you have sex? No. You have no control over how many children will be conceived when you have sex. But when you pay someone to create children in the lab for the purposes of in vitro fertilization, you're telling them how many. You're saying 5, 6, 7, 8. You're paying for a certain number of children. That's right. You're paying. You're buying children. You're paying for the creation of children. And then you freeze them in labs. And then you try to release 5. None take. You take a few more. But maybe they take right away. 4 of them don't make it. They pass. They became the sacrifice. The 2 implant. You get twins. And you keep the other 4 frozen down at the city IVF clinic downtown. And then they just stay frozen. They're frozen. They're actually called souls on ice. Souls on ice. Souls. People. Persons. Frozen. Call me crazy. I think people have a right to not be frozen. I know that's super crazy. So why is IVF wrong? Because it can violate a child's right to life. Now, if too many implant and mom's super fertile because of her estrogen, pills and estrogen implants or whatever she's taking to increase the fertility of her body to be set up for implantation, then they abort some of the babies. If too many implant and mom's pregnant with too many babies, they use a euphemism called selective reduction and they just abort the extra children. Okay, you understand this? If too many implant and it's dangerous now for her to be pregnant with that many babies, they just abort some of them. They kill some of those kids' siblings, okay? So that's how in vitro fertilization works. That's how IVF operates in the vast majority of cases. Did you know only 7-8% of babies created in labs through IVF will be born alive? Let me say that again. Only 7-8% of babies created in labs will be born alive. 8%. 8% of babies created through IVF will actually be born. So something like 92% of children created in the industry and process of in vitro fertilization will be discarded right out of the gate because they're not viable or they're not good quality or they're the wrong preferred sex of the parents or preliminary markers that are not advantageous or preferred by the parents. Something like 92% of babies created in IVF are just discarded out the gate. Does that sound like a child-friendly process? Does IVF sound like a child-friendly process? No, tons of babies lose their lives and are killed because of the industry and practice of in vitro fertilization. And that can be avoided. That's not like natural miscarriages, okay? Don't make that comparison in your mind. That's not like, oh, Well, a percentage of babies are always naturally miscarried. Mother Nature just spontaneously causing miscarriages where the child, for whatever reason, didn't continue to grow in the womb. That's not the same. That's not the same as an entire industry that's set up by humans to abuse children's rights. That's crazy that only 7 to 8% of children conceived in IVF are actually born. That many children lose their lives so you can get your one baby. I understand how painful infertility can be. It doesn't mean you get to abuse children's rights. We have like a million souls on ice in America right now. And many of them will be discarded. Flushed down toilets, just thrown away. Killed. Because of this industry. Secondly, it can violate a child's right to not be frozen. Like I said, call me crazy. I think you as a human being have a right to not be frozen. And according to estimates, because by the way, big fertility, like big abortion, makes getting data on their industry like virtually impossible. We don't really know any legitimate, statistically verified numbers. They make it kind of like a statistical black hole. But by some estimates, 20 to 40% of those 1 million frozen babies will just be abandoned. Now, you've heard of snowflake adoptions, probably. We have a friend who's done this. This is when basically to save those frozen children from being discarded and killed, loving families and parents with their hearts in the right place will say, my wife wants to try to save as many of those as she can. Hopefully those, maybe one or two of those babies will implant in my wife and we can give that child a life, okay? Rather than them just being discarded by their parents, or sometimes if you study big fertility, sometimes you'll read stories of IVF clinics who just discarded them anyways without consulting or talking to the parents who paid to have children created and frozen and stored down at the lab. They'll just get rid of them. This is not uncommon. This happens. So it violates a child's right to not be frozen. This should be simple, guys. Simple stuff for pro-lifers. You should believe that a child has a right to not be frozen. And thirdly, it can violate a child's right to their mother and father. And we're going to address that in just one second, actually. Because guess what? The IVF industry is an absolute gift to the LGBTQ-LMNOPIA, my name is Legion community. How do you think they create children? Huh? Have you ever thought about this? I think you're smart enough. I think you understand how this happens. They have to have in vitro fertilization. They have to have in vitro fertilization in order to create children. And often it involves surrogacy as well. But it has to start with in vitro fertilization. Because, you know, to quote my friend Brittany, choosing to send your life seed up a butt does not make you infertile, okay? You have chosen a non-procreative relationship, okay? That doesn't make you infertile, and it doesn't give you a right to have children. So in order to get the children they feel they have a right to, they have to use in vitro fertilization. So the in vitro fertilization industry ends up granting human rights children's abuses all around America by two dudes and two gals who want to have kids, okay? We're going to get to that third aspect of why in vitro fertilization is wrong in just a second, but I want to add this note to this conversation, okay? I usually talk about this with Katie Faust on the show, and you should go back and listen to old episodes with Katie Faust, but this is kind of my first full-length episode on this just by myself because I felt it was really important for you to hear from me on this. And I want to challenge your thinking on this if you disagree. And I want you equipped to be able to have these conversations with people. In vitro fertilization is part of the culture of death because it encourages women to delay marriage and having children because, hey, you can always freeze your eggs to climb the corporate ladder, right? And hey, just slay queen, crush the patriarchy, make a ton of money, don't be dependent on no man. In vitro fertilization enables women to delay getting married, to delay having children for the supposed promise of financial corporate satisfaction and success. We're already told in America that family and children are not that important, right? It does not take very much Google searching to find a documentary, a New York Times article, a mini doc, a podcast, an op-ed, a stupid famous blog talking about how wonderful that dink life is. You heard of that dink life? Double income, no kids, that dink life? How great it is to be childless in your 30s. It's just wonderful. Oh my goodness. I just saw an article the other day of two celebrities. Was it Seth Rogen? Gosh, what a disappointment he is to the name Seth. I think it was Seth freaking Rogen and his wife or gal, I don't remember, talking about how wonderful it is that, like, they're like, are you kidding me? We love not having kids. You know how great it is to wake up on Saturday mornings and not have to take care of children? We don't have to get up. We can sleep in. We can be fat lards. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, a little bit. Like, you hear this everywhere, okay? What was that study we just saw? It was that by 2025, 40% of women in their 30s will be childless. I think that's what it was. We're approaching 50%, y'all. We're approaching 50%. If that's 40% by 2025, then what the heck does 2040 look like? What the heck does 2030 look like? We're approaching where half of women in their 30s in America are childless and maybe unmarried. We're already being told children and family are not that important. You and your career and status is the most important. Focus on that now, girl. And then when you feel around to having children, then you can thaw your eggs and you'll probably be fine. Probably. Are they fine? Are they happy? Are women in their 30s who are unmarried and childless, are they happy? Do you sense that when you go online on social media? When you go to the grocery store? When you live in San Francisco, in New York City, in Seattle, in Portland, in Minneapolis, St. Paul, in Austin, Texas? Do you sense that? The University of Pennsylvania did a study not that long ago, found that childless women are 46% more likely to report high depression compared to mothers. 46% childless women more likely to report high depression compared to mothers. The Institute for Family Studies did a survey in 2021, found that the percentage of women reporting being happy, listen to this is really interesting. The percentage of women reporting being happy is initially lower with children in the 18 to 34 category. So meaning women between 18 and 34 who are married without children reported slightly more happiness than the women between 18 and 34 who are married with children, okay? But all of that changes the older that women get. So after 34, that was the only time that childless married women reported higher happiness than married women with children. Which, I mean, I could kind of see, maybe, like when you're in your early 30s and all of your other gal friends are still living it up and don't have any responsibilities, and you have three kids under four and you're hardly sleeping and your body aches and hurts and your husband works long hours, I could kind of see you being tempted to report, like, this is really hard. I'm not sure how happy I am right now. But then all of the stats change after that. And as you look at this, at the survey that we have here on the screen, you'll see that the happiness of married without children continues to go lower, and the happiness of women married with children continues to climb higher, and the discrepancy between both grows wider and wider and wider. Right, because when you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s, and now you got grandkids, you're reporting way more happiness now than your childless female friends who never had a kid, and now they're lonely, and some of their family members are dying off, and they don't even have children, or they don't even have a spouse. Isn't that interesting? Shouldn't surprise you. Should not surprise you whatsoever. We're going to get to how IVF violates a children's right to their mother and father in just one second. but I thought it would be important to discuss how IVF is used in this broader culture of death to encourage women to delay the very thing that will bring them purpose, that will give them peace, that will give them joy, which is to watch the creation of little people that you created and now you're responsible for, the most beautiful, joyful thing on earth. But first, we want to thank our sponsor at Every Life Diaper Company. Every life is America's pro-life diaper company. Isn't that cool? A baby industry that doesn't want to kill babies. I know, it's super crazy. All eight of the major American baby brands in America rhetorically or financially support the abortion industry. Yeah, the baby industry helps subsidize or celebrate the murder of their clientele base, which means they sell less product. Make it make sense. You can't defeat a culture of death by funding that culture of death. You got to fund a culture of life and fight back with your wallet. Be a steward of your money. Use it for life and righteousness. If you have poop around the house and you still need diapers, your nursery at your church or your pregnancy resource center or loved ones in your life who are having babies, get yourself or send them some diapers at everylife.com. Promo code Seth10, promo code Seth10 for 10% off your first order, and let them know that we sent you. Thank you, Every Life. Now, why is IVF wrong? IVF, in vitro fertilization, is wrong because it violates a child's right to life, it violates a child's right to not be frozen, and it violates a child's right to their mother and father. This is nowhere more apparent than in the LGBTQIA LMNOP, My Name is Legion Revolution, who believe they have a right to children despite the fact that they've chosen a non-procreative sexual relationship. IVF can and is being used to violate children's right to their mother and father. To what extent exactly, to what percentage? I could not actually find updated numbers. But in 2019, this article here at the New York Times said that self-identifying LGBTQ people make up 5 to 10% of fertility clinic patients. That was in 2019, y'all. 2019. You've probably seen the explosion in trans-identifying Americans between 2019 and today. It's bonkers. It's bonkers. And by the way, it proves it's a social contagion. Nothing that significant happened in American culture except cultural propaganda and messaging that could have caused such an explosion of trans-identifying Americans or LGBTQ whatever identifying people. So if that was 5 to 10% of fertility clinic patients being into the gay stuff and a non-procreative relationship, what is that percentage now? I have to guess it's over 30. I have to guess it's 40 or more. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. But you're probably seeing the stories, the TikToks, the social media stories of all the non-procreative sexual relationship people saying, we're getting children. How are they getting children? They're using in vitro fertilization. They're using in vitro fertilization. I hope you understand that, okay? Unless the two lesbians are okay with a third-party dude impregnating one of them through an actual act of intercourse, which is not very common, then they're doing in vitro fertilization. That's how they're creating the babies, okay? And if it's two gay dudes, they go out and rent a womb as well because he don't have the parts. And so he's got to go rent a uterus. By the way, black and brown wombs, a lot cheaper than white wombs. Did you know that? Black and brown wombs, a lot cheaper than white wombs. So you end up having a lot of the racial nature of this and the racism that begins to become inherent in this as well, because then the rich white Pete Buttigieg folks end up preying on the poor black and brown women who generally it is way, 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 way cheaper to rent their wombs than a white woman. I'm not trying to inject race into this. I'm observing what's a reality. I'm telling you that that's true. That's true that black and brown wombs are a lot cheaper than white wombs. Okay? But they're starting with in vitro fertilization, and oftentimes it includes surrogacy as well, especially if it's two gay dudes. What are they trying to do? This is a war against the natural world. Okay? Let's call it this. Nature is a bigot. That's what the in vitro fertilization big fertility crowd believes. Nature is a bigot. Like, it's not fair. that when we have anal sex, that he can't have an embryo in his urethra. It's just not fair. We need to change the fundamental nature of reality so that we have the right to children, even though we chose a relationship that can't produce children. Have you seen this about the left, by the way? This demand for equality, quote unquote, in every sphere. They want us all to look the same. They actually hate the fact that men and women have these beautiful, distinct differences about them. And by the way, there's a theological reason for that. It's because those differences scream a creator. Actually, that's the answer. The differences between men and women are so pronounced that you have to have your head pretty far up your own butt to deny those fundamental differences. Okay? And those differences are so in your face that it suggests, screams, a creator. That's the one thing that the liberal establishment and the humanistic revolution that's created this culture of death cannot acknowledge. They cannot bend the knee, and they cannot say, my king, my king. If they acknowledge the external moral order, the lawgiver, the unmovable mover, okay, the unmoved mover, the divine logos of the universe, the God-man, then they can no longer live however the hell they want to live. I hope you see that when we talk about big fertility and this now attempt in California to redefine even infertility, it's a proxy war attack against their creator. I don't like the fact that my sexual preferences and relationship can't result in a kid because I want a kid. So the law itself and nature itself should change to cater to my delusions rather than abandoning those delusions and finding the way, the truth, and the life. Do you see this? Let me give you an example. In California last year, this is so insane. There was an SB 729 bill. I cannot recall if Gavin Newsom signed it into law or not yet. And this bill attempted to redefine infertility to provide insurance coverage to gay people in non-procreative relationships who cannot have children for their IVF treatments. Many insurance plans will cover your IVF costs, excuse me, if you meet the definition of infertility, which is defined as unprotected heterosexual intercourse for 12 months that does not result in a pregnancy or live birth, end quote. But they want to change the definition of infertility. Why? Because they want those insurance coverages for their fertility IVF treatments, even though they chose a relationship that cannot produce a kid. Now, the whole, do you choose to be gay? Can you get rid of the desires? Are they there forever? I actually don't even want to get into that right now. What I'm saying is that regardless of their sexual drive or desires, they have chosen to be in a relationship that is fundamentally non-procreative. It cannot produce a child, okay? So you don't get to have children. I'm sorry. That's not how the natural world works, because children have a right to their mother and their father, and barring, you know, obviously all things being equal, tragedies happen. Sometimes you don't get your mom and your dad. Then children still have a right to a father and a mother, okay? You, in your non-procreative relationship, don't get to have children. I understand you do. You're doing it right now. It's wrong. It's immoral. It's evil. And you're screwing up your children. Oh, no, the studies show that kids raised by gay couples fare the same. No, they don't. No, they don't. And let me prove it to you. Every big lib has literally acknowledged for decades that children fare best in every sociological category possible when raised by their mother and their father in a low-conflict marriage and home. It was only after, in the lead-up and after Obergefell, when they found the fictional right to gay marriage in the Constitution, that they suddenly pivoted and said, no social science shows that children fare better when raised by a mother and a father than raised by two fathers or two mothers. They literally acknowledged the social science on the importance of motherhood and fatherhood, the importance of mothers and fathers for decades until they wanted gay marriage. And then the same people in institutions said, the science is out. It's not, it's settled yet. We don't really, yes, we do. And you knew it the whole time. You just don't want the studies out there countering your claims that kids are fine with two mommies and two daddies. And sometimes they say even better off than a kid with their mom and dad. Ridiculous. Anyways, they're trying to redefine infertility. And remember, what happens in California doesn't stay in California. So that your insurance premiums, if you're listening to this, will skyrocket because the people having anal sex thinks it's discriminatory that they have to pay out of their own pocket for expensive IVF treatments so they can intentionally deny a child their mother. That's what's actually happening. Because IVF is used first to create the baby, right? That the two lesbians or two gays purchase in order to put it in one of the lesbians' wombs, therefore denying the child to a father, or put it in a surrogate's womb by the gay dudes, denying the child their birth mother and their bio mother and any mother ever moving forward. Right? That they have to start with IVF to get the kids. Children have a natural right to their mother and father. And in horrible circumstances where that's not possible, they have a right to a mother and a father. So children fare best behind family structures that have a mother and a father. We've known this for decades. The best social science has illustrated this forever. Now, even if social science came out that looked credible, that countered my claim or assertion, I would still argue that children have a right to a mother and a father because that's how the natural world works. Okay? The LGBTQIALMNOP mafia is in a war against nature itself. They don't like the fact that naturally there are only males and females and that they are sexually complementary and that's how babies are created. They don't like that. It's a war against nature itself. You could actually say leftism, like definitionally, is at war with nature in almost every capacity. Mark Rignaris, who's done some of the best work on how children need mothers and fathers, has a 2012 study called How Different Are the Adult Children of Parents Who Have Same-Sex Relationships? Findings from the New Family Structure Study Social Science Research in 2012 based on large, random, and nationally representative samples. And here were his findings. Compared to children of parents, at least one of whom had a gay or lesbian relationship, those reared by their married biological parents were found to have fared better on dozens of indicators and worse on none. So let me summarize that. He said, compared to kids the kids raised by their married biological parents fared better on dozens of indicators, and they fared worse on none of those indicators compared to children raised by parents who had at least one gay or lesbian relationship. Okay? And then a study was published by the left-leaning research institution, Child Trends, okay? So they don't really agree with us. And this was years ago. Here's what they said. It is not simply the presence of two parents, but the presence of two biological parents that seem to support children's development. Research clearly demonstrates that family structure matters for children. And the family structure that helps children the most is a family headed by two biological parents in a low-conflict marriage. Excuse me. Children in single-parent families, children born to unmarried mothers, and children in step families or cohabiting relationships face higher risks of poor outcomes. There is thus value for children in promoting strong, stable marriages between biological parents. They would never publish that today. There is value for children in promoting strong, stable marriages between biological parents. And instead, every new stupid sitcom and show in America is about a bunch of weird gay parenting, right? A bunch of weird, like, gay relationships and having and raising kids. Because that's how you change America, is by changing the family unit. And yet the left used to acknowledge this, that obviously we know children fare best when raised by their parents. So now they want to redefine infertility so that they can get insurance-paid coverage to get children raise your premium so they can do it because they chose a non-procreative relationship. That this is the insanity of our culture today. We have a video here we want to show you to show you exactly what I mean by this, okay? How IVF is being used more and more and more and more and more by the LGBT, LMNOP, people in order to get children that they cannot naturally create themselves. So here's a video of two women. Listen, this is so weird. Here's a video of two women, one of whom thinks she is a man. Okay, so one of these women is taking testosterone and trying to become a dude, but they're lesbians because they're both women and she will never become a man. And they're in a sexual relationship that by definition cannot create children. So what are they gonna do? IVF, of course, IVF, here we go.
We are officially starting embryo transfer number 2 prep. We needed to wait a few days because my progesterone levels were still a little bit too high, so I couldn't start the medication yet. We needed to wait for my levels to go a little bit lower. I posted a video talking about doing medicated versus unmedicated. We decided that it's best for us to still just do the medicated route because we did that before. Even though it didn't work, we just feel like that's the best option for my body. So we're changing up the type of estrogen. I'm doing injectables instead of the pills. So before I was doing 2 orally and then 2 suppository. I prefer doing the shots because I don't like taking the pills because it goes through my stomach. I get sick. I get nauseous.
Made her really nauseous.
Yeah. So I've gotten so used to them. I'm basically a pro now. I don't even get him to do mine. And Jesse also has to do his tea shot today. So we thought, let's do our shots together.
There is so much there, I could write a book about it. That horrifically disturbing, very sad TikTok video says so much about our culture, doesn't it? I mean, first of all, it's two women, one of whom thinks she's a dude. So the gal who understands that she's a gal says that he, meaning she, has to take his, meaning her, T-shot, which is testosterone, because the other lesbian thinks that she's a dude, which makes them heterosexual, except no, it doesn't. You're living in la-la land. And so she takes her estrogen shot to increase the fertility of her body during the embryo transfer so that they can get pregnant through IVF, while she, who thinks she's a he, is taking testosterone to try to make him herself feel like a masculine body. Are you still following me now? And then it says their embryo transfer failed, so they're there crying and sad. And then it says over the screen, I had picked the embryo and was going to surprise my fiance with the sex. Oh, so sex is a thing? Are you telling me that like you picked a female fetus and that's a girl? How the hell did you know that, you bigot? Are you projecting gender identity and gender norms onto your fetus? Onto your embryos, you disgusting turf, you trans-exclusive radical feminist. I'm sorry. I can't. I just can't anymore. And then, tragically, we find out here that I think the woman who thinks that she's a dude has a kid who's 15 that they were going to surprise. So to top it all off, one of these gals already has a kid who now has to deal with the fact that her mom is dating another woman and they're in a trans heterosexual attempted relationship, but they're really just both lesbians. Boy, this is getting really complicated. Who's the dad of that 15-year-old? Who knows? And then who's the dad of the failed embryos that didn't implant in the lesbian here who acknowledges that she's a woman? Who knows? That's why in vitro fertilization is such a quote unquote gift to the LGBTQ elemento humana humana people, because it allows them to get children they could otherwise not get. This stuff should be illegal. You don't have a right to children. Children have a right to their mother and father. You don't have a right to children. And then to top it all off at the very end, they say, even though there was never a pregnancy, there was still mourning, sadness that one baby girl embryo was lost. IVF girlies, you are all so strong. We hope next time is our time. Meaning that they're creating female fetuses. IVF girlies, she's literally talking to her frozen embryo saying, we hope our next time is the time, is our time that you'll implant. So you really want a girl. So you understand that, I guess, that there are girls and that like females exist. So I guess I would ask these two lesbians, one of whom thinks that she's a dude, what is a woman? What is a woman anyways? Apparently you really want to be pregnant with a preborn female. So what is that exactly? Can you give me a definition of that? But also they only want girls. So I guess they're sexist. Do you remember Paris Hilton did this? Do you guys remember this last year? She announced that she had, unbelievably, 20 frozen sons because she only wanted a girl. And she kept creating embryos through IVF, and they kept turning out to be boys. And she was ticked off. So she has 20 frozen sons, and she's waiting to get that one girl. Can you imagine what life will be like for those poor little boys if they ever are allowed to have a life and be born? Can you imagine? My mom kept me frozen for years and created 19 of my brothers because she hated boys that much. She hated the thought of having a son. So she froze us so she could have our sister. Wow, we really must be hated by our mother. Seriously, think about that. Think about if those boys are ever allowed to be implanted and gestated and born and given a life. What a horrible thing to learn about your mother, how much she hated you. There are real world consequences to the kind of behavior we're allowing in America. Conservative writer Daniel McCarthy, by the way, has come up with a really helpful phrase. He's dubbed what's happening biosocialism. He has a great piece called Fertility, Family, and Biosocialism at the website creators.com. And as we kind of start to land the plane, I want to read this to you. I want you to think about this. This is really profound. He says, the old industrial socialism meant asserting control over the means of production. But biological socialism is when the government manages the means of reproduction. Biological socialism, like the old-fashioned kind, aims to equalize conditions. In this case, the conditions that apply to natural families and artificially commissioned ones. The new biological socialism doesn't just argue that economic conditions are unfair. It argues that nature itself is discriminatory and must be corrected. Do you remember? Nature is a bigot. That requires comprehensive systems of control, including price controls for fertility. While employers and religious conservatives have obvious economic and moral objections to legislations like California SB 729, there's a fundamental political problem as well. If more and more families over time owe their existence to such laws, the very idea of family will cease to be natural or a matter of immemorial custom. The most basic social unit of self-responsibility in American life, the unit that forms individual character itself, will be subordinated to political collective responsibility. It will be the government that forms society, not the other way around. When insurance compensates for misfortune, that's one thing. But when the misfortune is not truly out of one's control, when biologically fertile people do not engage in procreative sex, insurance mandates become an instrument of social engineering for redistributing money and responsibility alike. A self-governing people arises from self-governing institutions, above all the family. And families arise from fertility. If California replaces the biological laws of fertility with its own political preferences, it will remove the family from the realm of custom and nature, which no one controls, and socialize the very building block of society. You see, Karl Marx wasn't thinking big enough. Why expropriate anything else when you can seize the factors that make men and women? Wow. Wow. Think about that. Biosocialism is what we're facing. In fancy language, the family will cease to be a natural institution where the next generation is raised by the two individuals who created them, giving them genealogical identity and the mother-father duo that we all need to launch effectively into this broken world and make it better. Instead, the state will force nature to be tolerant and equal and remake the family structure in America in the name of quote-unquote fertility equality. This is the proxy war being waged against nature itself by those on the left who do not like the way that families are created because it reflects God's design, who do not like the way that the natural world operates because it doesn't allow them the quote-unquote right to access children as easily as they'd like to. And what is the consequence? What is the consequence, first and foremost, always, of these kinds of bad ideas? The kids, children, every time. Kids are always the first victims of bad ideologies and kooky leftist adult ideologies. I want to finish with this Nancy Piercy quote. Nancy Piercy has probably spoken to some of these cultural issues more prophetically than almost anyone else in the culture today. And you should read her book, Love Thy Body. But this is what's at stake, okay? What we're doing is we're commodifying the process of parenthood, and eventually the state will have to step in and define for us what is a parent and who qualifies as one. Because we can no longer look to nature to tell us who a parent is, apparently. I mean, you can go jack off and get paid to do it over and over and over again, and you can have hundreds of kids all around the country that you've never met and will never meet. Well, are you you're the biological parent. You can rent your womb. And then you can sever that child from their parent at the moment of birth, and they never get to actually know their parent. Do you understand? Like, what's happening with in vitro fertilization doesn't allow kids to know their parents. It's severing kids from their real parents. So when we no longer can look to the natural world to define things like parenthood and family, then the state must do that. So Nancy Piercy says, and I want you to think about this. She says, when pried loose from its connection to natural parenthood, artificial reproduction can feed into the dehumanizing mindset that children are commodities to be manufactured through technological processes for paying customers. The babies that result may come to be regarded as artifacts, as depersonalized products that we plan, create, modify, and improve. In addition, the costs of high-tech reproductive services may make procreation look more and more like business deals and consumer purchasing. Children become merchandise to be evaluated according to standards of quality control. And if the paying parents do not believe they are getting their money's worth, they may reject the product. There was this horrible story of two gay dudes who paid a surrogate to carry their baby, learned something was wrong with the baby, even though it was a livable but unfortunate condition. And so they told the surrogate that she had to abort the baby. You'll read about these stories happening all around the country right now with horrific surrogacy cases because children are being treated as property and commodities. And you as the paying customer are not getting, quote unquote, what you paid for. We didn't even get to the whole designer baby stuff and CRISPR and how now we are living in a culture that is using children more and more to fulfill our adult desires and view children as merely products and commodities rather than as people, as persons, as individuals, as babies, as children, as image bearers of God. What does that do to a society? Well, any society is judged by the kind of world that it leaves to its children. And we are leaving a very depraved, dark, and disgusting world for our children. And it's time to turn it around. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Go to iTunes, Spotify, YouTube. Leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you think. It really helps if you click 5 stars and leave a review. Go over to Rumble and give us a subscribe for if and when I'm ever digitally assassinated from the YouTube network, the YouTube world. Share this episode with your friends. I hope this was helpful to think more deeply about this issue of in vitro fertilization. If you want to join the White Rose Resistance, go to thewhiterose.life. thewhiterose.life and sign up as an ally at $35 a month. you get a resistance box in the mail, and you get our digital community, and you join us digitally online for our pro-life courses, curriculum, live calls. We really need your help. We're the fastest growing pro-life organization in America, and it's time to take back life. Until next week, I'm Seth Gruber, and this is The Seth Gruber Show.